Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/acast. That's burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Hello guys, and welcome to this week's episode of Heavy Metal Tones with me, your podcast host, Tony Evans. I hope you enjoyed last week's episode with Ralph Halber from Heads for the Dead. I know I bloody enjoyed interviewing him. It was really real fun time. I hope you did enjoy it, because I did. Anyway, back to a good old album review. Tony does a heavy metal classic. And actually, it's not a heavy metal classic, it's a heavy rock classic in my books. And it's one of those forgotten albums by this band. The band in question is Def Leppard. Most people will know Def Leppard for Pyromania and Hysteria, some of the biggest selling albums of all time. But I'm going to say that I don't actually like or enjoy either of those albums. Of the two, Pyromania is my favourite of those two. But the album which we're going to talk about today, which is On Through the Night, their first album, released in 1970. Hang on, what have I got here? 1980, sorry. It's one of those forgotten albums, because it's the Def Leppard that I particularly love. It's a Def Leppard that sort of sits in a time that they... I don't know how to describe it. You have the first EP, which is the Def Leppard, and then you have this album they released. And of course, it sort of jumps in and around... It's in splashing in and around the new wave of British heavy metal, and they were sort of linked with that sort of groundbreaking new movement. I sort of struggle to put them in there. They sit there like a lot of bands like Venom do that shouldn't really, and but they sort of have that sort of new wave sound. But unlike the other new wave bands, they don't have any punky influence. It doesn't feel... There's no punk feel that you get. I mean, even though that my maiden might like to disagree, with Deano on vocals, and he was a big punk, right? You get those punky feels. So they formed in 1976. And from 1976 to 1977, they were called the Atomic Mass. And then from 77 for a year, they were Chemical Reaction. And then 77 onwards, after that, were Def Leppard. They were formed in Sheffield, which is, for those that don't know, is up in the north of England. It's an industrial part of the country, where a lot of big bands like Judas Priest and Black Sabbath, they're not from Sheffield, but they're from the industrial parts of England. And that's, I think, as we've talked before in the previous episode, is how where the birth of heavy metal comes from. It's like true punk is really only punk if you've lived in a to be honest, if you lived in London in the 70s, growing up in the 60s, you know, it was a shithole. And same with metal. It's like that sort of industrial sound comes from the machinery of hard labor, working men's clubs, and a need to get away. And this band, Def Leppard, is one of those bands. The difference between, as I said, they don't have a punky influence. What they get for me, what I get from them, is that sort of, and you see it straight away in the lyric of this, of the second second track on the album. They always yearned, particularly Joe Elliott, to be big in America, right? Because they saw the writing on the wall. Being big in England was not big enough then. The money was over in America. The glamour, the sun, the women, the drugs, everything was over there in America, okay? And when you listen to their music, particularly this album, probably up to Pyromania, definitely up to about Pyromania, I'd say. They have this sort of AOR glam sound, you know. They have like a they sound a bit like Journey. Some of the tracks would sit beautifully on an Eagles album. They have a big West Coast sound or East Coast sound. And the original lineup consists of this is the original lineup. The new, obviously, from 91 onwards was a different lineup, but the original lineup was Joe Elliott on guitar, Pete Willis on guitar backing vocals, Steve Clark, sadly, Steve Clark passed away of alcohol addiction on the 8th of January 1991. So just a little bit of a note there. Those that are struggling with any kind of, as I like to call it, the dark tea time of the soul. That's a Douglas Adams quote, but you understand. Any of those issues, you reach out, please reach out. Because he had such a wonderful talent. He's considered one of the top 100 guitarists of all time, one of the wildest guitarists of all time. I personally, along with Gary Moore, I sort of modeled myself on his stance, the low slung Gibson, you know, the sort of, I don't know, it just has that whole, you can see where hair metal come from when it comes to people who like Steve Clark. Now, he was only 30 years old. There are people out there who are listening to this, who know people as well, that, you know, in their families and their personal lives, where this sort of stuff is happening. Please do reach out and help. There's never ever a time you can't find help. There's always someone to reach out to, even in your darkest hour. Anyway, on that note, we'll move on to then we have Rick Savage on bass and backing vocals. Rick Allen, the now one-armed drummer, but had two arms then, on drums and backing vocals. So they all did singing as well. So again, that's where you get that. I get that East Coast, West Coast, you know, sort of Van Halen. I mean, that's another one. They're almost Van Halen-y, but without the early on, without the, I don't know, without the flair. And that's a horrible thing to say. What I mean by flair is, you know what I mean, that like Joe Elliott's a great frontman, but he's, you know, he's no Dave Lee Roth when it comes to flair. And this is where I get stuck with this, because I really, really love this early album, because it's very mixed, it's very progressive, it has blues, it has West Coast, East Coast, it has New Wave, it's got prog in there, there's some stuff in there that it could come straight off an Iron Maiden album, or the early Maiden albums. So they were dealing and listening to that New Wave scene. I know, like, when there's an apocryphal story that Sting was at a bar, I think it might be the Marquee, and the Damned were playing. And Sting was standing at the bar, and Dave Vanian went to the bar and was chatting to him, and Sting said, "I think I could be in a band." And Dave Vanian told him to fuck off. He's Ponzi, middle class twat. This is an apocryphal story. Now, where I was coming from with there was that. I think that Def Leppard felt the same way in that movement. They weren't quite, I mean, they weren't, they didn't have an image that was, you know, the studs and the leather and the spandex, you know, and they just didn't, and they, and you know, they just didn't sit in the same, feel the same as, say, like Maiden or Demon or Satan or Venom or Diamond Head or Praying Mantis. Although we're probably closer to Praying Mantis, to be honest with you, they were actually probably closer to Tigers of Pang Tang. So I think, like a lot of those like punk bands in the 70s, like XTC, sort of, you know, and to some extent, I hate to say this, but it's true, the Stranglers sort of grabbed on the coattails of the punk movement and made themselves a place of, in history. And I think it's the same with Def Leppard. Obviously, they went on to be not as big as Maiden, but they, at one point, bigger. Yeah, they had their moment in the sun. I've seen them live twice, absolutely brilliant. They were absolutely brilliant both times. They just have a showmanship to them. They can tell why, of all of the new wave bands of the time, them and Maiden were going to be stadium bands. You were never going to see a band like Witchfinder General, Witchfind, or Praying Mantis, or even Diamondhead, filling out stadiums. You just weren't going to see it. Well, these two, you could feel in their future that it was going to be there. So obviously they've had a few albums. This is my favourite. The second one is the most, is where their sound starts to coalesce. I particularly like this one because I love the cover. I love the Pantechnicon truck on the front flying through the sky. I like the old logo. It has this really polished feel to it. More polished than actually than any other of the sort of first outings of some of those bands. I mean, even my Maiden's first album didn't sound as polished as this, and that's saying something. Now, it was produced by, and I've written this down, give me a second. I have to find my notes. One moment. Corey Bone handwriting. It was produced by Tom Allen, or the Colonel Tom Allen, they call him. He produced Priest's British Steel and a couple of Black Sabbath and Crocus albums. It was recorded at the Startling Studios, which in Ascot, Berkshire, which is Ringo Starr's studio, where British Steel was recorded. So again, that's probably why it has that. There's some points where it sounds a little priesty, and sometimes... Now, you might have said to me before, Richmond Priest, why did you not mention Priest in those big bands of the new wave of British heavy metal? I don't sit them in that category because they formed... much earlier. I think New Wave of British Heavy Metal bands form in around 76, 77 and go through to 80, 81, whereas Priest formed well before then. Yes, they were part of it, but they weren't a foundation member. They were sort of like just on the periphery. But anyway, that's a different conversation, and I have an episode regarding that, so please go back and listen to it. Now, it was... released on the 14th of March 1980, 11 songs, 44 minutes and 4 seconds long. A couple of the tracks were re-recorded from their EP. That's Rock Brigade and Wasted. And Overture, sorry. It was from their first EP. Now, it's quite hard to listen to their first EP, but when you do hear it, it does have that real rawness, and you can see why... the labels, and they're on Vertigo for this particular album, why Vertigo picked them up. I mean, at the time they were riding high with, like, as mentioned the previous weeks, you know, the Sensational Alex Harvey Band. They had Black Sabbath on their books, alright, so they were picking up new wave bands all over the place, and they picked up Def Leppard, which was a good one for them. This album didn't do too well. It sort of came in and disappeared. It got to 98 in Australia, 515 in the UK, and 51st in the USA. A couple of singles off of it that got to 61 and 51. Hello America got to 45, sorry, and Wasted got to 61. So they weren't, they didn't nudge any of the charts at all, but they had a very big underground following, and their following album, really in the deep end, really took off. That one absolutely flew off, I think mainly off of the, because it was then Mutt Lange was producing, the famous Mutt Lange. Yes, the second album, High and Dry, 1981. Then there was Pyromania in 83, Hysteria in 87, Adrenalize in 92, Slang in 96, Euphoria in 1999, X in 2002, Yeah in 2006, Songs from the Sparkle Lounge in 2008, which is the tour I saw them on. It was, I have to say, it's the only t-shirt I've never really kept. It was a bit hair metal-y. Def Leppard in 2015, and Diamond Star Halos in 2022, which I thought was a really good album, by the way. It certainly, for me, was my favourite of the newer albums. But, as I said, this one here, On Through the Night, 1980, is the one we're talking about. So, they're rising stars. They've written a cracking album with 11 songs on it, which is pretty good value for money, if you think about it, on vinyl, 11 tracks. They don't, and they're not all... speedy geese either. They don't go at a million miles an hour. They're all quite deliciously different and differently textured, and I actually will talk about those on the B-side of this show. So also a quick note, those that don't know what I was talking about earlier, sorry, I should have made a note of that, with Rick Allen, he lost his arm in a car accident and had to learn to play the drums again. He learned by lying in bed, the hospital bed, using his feet and tapping his feet against the metal ends of the bed to make rhythm. And so he didn't give up. And the band didn't give up on him, which is, you know, amazing. He came out and invented a drum kit where he could use his feet. So it's an electric kit. He uses his feet and his arm and just... amazing piece of for me, just willing to keep going. I mean, it could have broken many people, and it should have broken many people, and it has done, but not Rick. You know, he just carried on. And you know, when he came out that time, we saw him live, and he walked out in the middle of the ramp, the big stage down the middle of the stadium, and he came out with the, you know, waving his one arm. We were just, and oh, it was just so makes you think, hey, you know, don't say, oh, I can't do that now. If a person, a drummer, before he lost his arm as well, one of the best drummers there is, to lose his arm, recover, and not lose a beat, pardon the pun, and just take it on the chin and keep going. And good on the band for standing by him. Really, really amazing, you know. And all the kudos and success to them all, in my opinion. Anyway. Enough for this side. I will talk to you on the other side, track by track, on this amazing album. Talk to you on the other side. Bye for now.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi guys, welcome back to the show. Def Leppard's On Through the Night. Now, where do we begin? We begin at the beginning, don't we? I'll give you a track rundown first, okay? So I said 11 tracks. I really cherish my Vertigo print. Mine's a Canadian print, I think. I don't know why I've got a Canadian one. I seem to have a Canadian one. I really, really love it a lot. A, for the artwork. B, for the fact that it's one of those forgotten Wobbum albums that are quite hard to get hold of now on vinyl. So it begins with Rock Brigade, which was a single in the US only, released on the 14th of May 1980. Hello America, Sorrow is a Woman, It Could Be You, Satellite, When the Walls Come Tumbling Down, Wasted, Rocks Off, It Don't Matter, Answer to the Master, Overture. Now, as I said, this is a real mix of interesting styles and sounds. It has that really, at some points, some really heavy, dirty, Gibson-driven blues overtures, right? Real sort of riff, head-banging party music. It's what makes this particular kind of album so delicious and so addictive to listeners, because every time I play it, and I've played it a fair few times, listeners, I can guarantee you that, I hear something different. Like when I sat down this morning before recording this and just gave myself reacquaintance with the sound, it sort of, I don't know, again, I saw new things, I heard new things in it. So I had to scrabble to write some notes down, because I'd already read notes, and I thought, no, I'm thinking I've heard something different. So let's start with Rock Brigade, again, the American single. It's very much you can see why they released it only in America as a single. It's good sing-along, anthemic, arena-y sounding song. It's set really well on Pyromania, or even to be honest, with a bit more polish, it'd probably sound really good on Hysteria as well. It's not my favorite song on the album. I think it's a little bit Journey, as I told you before. They do have this sort of sound that could sit nicely in a Journey album, or an Eagles, or something like that, you know, one of those sort of big hairy American bands of the 70s, you know, the type. Even Lynyrd Skynyrd to some extent, actually. And that's saying something. One second, you can move this over here. Sorry, put my book down. Oop, not the mic again. All right, yes, so I've put here dirty, sort of semi-proto-glam, almost Joan Jett-ish. That's what I've written here. I hear a bit of the Black Hearts in this guitar sound. It's that, it really, when I say before on the first half that there was no punk sound in this album, I'm sort of slightly lying. I think there's a little bit of the New York Dolls in this, not the drug part of the New York Dolls, but that sort of sleazy Gibson slur, which they were very, really good at. And it sort of is there. It's definitely set like where a lot of the bands in the era were writing about youth culture and their their surroundings and stuff that they knew most about. Appears to me that the right when they wrote this album, they were really fantasizing. There was a lot of fantasy and forward projecting to their bigger success in America and around the world. So again, a good opening set, good opening track. Again, not something that I'm overly love, but it's there. Then the single, as I said before, I said that they always felt like they wanted to live in America, be American as such. I think they're very proud of being British, but you know, that sort of sun, sea, sex and Botox, big boobs and bouncing blue waves, you know what I mean? And you get that from Hello America. Hello America is their call to arms for their future, because they do get looked down upon by some of the hardcore fans of the time that they sort of sold their souls to the Americans. I don't really think that's the case. You're selling your soul to the Americans is getting famous and then going and doing it. This seems to me that they were always planning. There was always a future. There was always an agenda that they were going to break out from the grey leaden skies of Sheffield in the north of England from flat caps and Yorkshire pudding and hard hours in the mine and pits and factories like their parents would have done to the sun and the sand and the women and the dollars and the fast cars and the... You know, I mean, I keep painting that picture, but that's what the picture that we were painted back then in the 70s of that. We were coming out from going into major strikes and unemployment and devaluation of the pound and selling off of our national amenities and our national industry. Our cars industry was failing, coal mining was falling apart, steel mines and so on, and the working hours were atrocious for little pay. There hadn't been pay rises for some time, and we cost of living very much like now was not in line with earnings. So, but we looked across the ocean and there they were, the Americans, right, chewing gum and driving open top cars and big shoulder pads and a dollar. Now, that may not be true. I mean, there's a lot of parts of America, as we know, that were struggling, of course, equally as much as anywhere else. But that wasn't a picture that was painted to us as youths in the 70s. So, Hello America for me is definitely. Musically, again, it's pretty good. I said it's got that sort of AOR East Coast sound, Joan Jett sound, and I quite like it. It does leave me a little bit cold because it makes me feel a bit sad, because I've always thought that that they got a lot of stick for choosing the direction of their lives, and they shouldn't do, because musically, this album, and again, if you were going to listen to it for the first time after this show, you might open your eyes a little bit. It is an absolute corker. Don't just go straight to your pyromanias and your hysterias. This is a really brilliant album. I think so, better than High and Dry, and that's and that was their first major big success. And then we move into Sorrow Is a Woman. Now, Sorrow Is a Woman is borderline ballady. Now they are well known for their ballads. Again, that's from their American influences, just trying to be a little bit different. I think, to be honest though, Sorrow Is a Woman reminds me slightly of Maiden's version, Sabbath, when they did Women in Uniform. It's not as catchy as Women in Uniform, but it's got that sort of bluesy kind of sadness to it. You know, sorrow is a woman. It is. I mean, it's a great lyric. It's a great lyric. I'm also not sure why he sort of got woman in uniform there. I think maybe because it was woman in the title, my brain went in a weird tangent. Anyway, the lyric is it's a brilliant lyric. You're always pretending to be someone who prefers to be free. You think you can fool me with your lying eyes, but what is the game that you play when all you're trying is to say is that you're lonely in a need of a friend? Oh yeah, sorrow woman, sorrow woman. I just can't seem to get you. Oh yeah, sorrow woman. If only you could see you as I do. And can't you see that it's true? There's someone as lonely as you, trying so hard to get through. And why can't everyone see that the way it really should be? Why hide your feelings and suffer the pain? Oh yeah, sorrow woman, sorrow woman. I don't think that's a relationship song. I think that could be something about mums, sisters, who knows. It doesn't sound, every time I listen to that single, I do feel a bit sad. I mean, it does have that title, I suppose, Sorrow is a Woman, but it does have a real bluesy feel to it. It's a fantastic guitar piece in it, great solo. It's not as down as you think it would be. And then we move into It Could Be You. Now, Joe Elliott's got an amazing voice, okay? We haven't really spoke about this yet, but he has an amazing vocal range. And It Could Be You is possibly one of the most interesting songs of the album because it really says, hey, I love Judas Priest. The way that his vocal comes in with a very high scream, the guitars are moving the same way as KK Downing and Tipton played. It's got that real Priest groove. It's fast, it's fun, it's energetic. It could easily come off of any of the early Priest albums by a long shot. It's actually I'm surprised it wasn't put out as a single, but it is an absolute cracker of a song. Follows, I mean, Sorrow is a Woman starts fast and then goes slow, whereas It Could Be You just comes out of the gate straight away, rocking and rolling. That dirty Gibson sound, that twin guitar sound, like Maiden was trying to catch forever and ever and ever. Before, you know, they want the Wishbone Ash twin sound, you know. It has a sort of Nazareth feel. I didn't mention that before. They do feel a bit like Nazareth. There's some Priest sounds to it. There's a bit of early Maiden you can almost feel, even though this is before Maiden. This is around the same time, but it just seems that they caught the zeitgeist. Yes, I said zeitgeist. I do know other long words as well that begin with Z. Don't ask me now. Anyway, then we move to Satellite. Satellite's an interesting number. This really is fantastic. Again, it follows on from It Could Be You really well. It's got lovely chuggy, light guitar chug. You know, not a really heavy blow your ears, but just a rocking, chugging. Almost proto down sort of palm muted sound, and it has this sort of real fun US sound. Again, this one is a very American sounding one, about, obviously it's about what it says on the thing, it's shooting through the sky, because the front of the album, the cover I did mention before, is a Pantechnicon flying through the sky with a guitar on the back. It's got that sort of fun feel. It's the middle of this album really does seem to gallop along. You sort of, before you blink, you're at sort of halfway, you've turned the record over and you think, where's it gone? It also has a slight I'm trying to think what this song reminds me of. I think it's Dr. Feelgood, but I could be wrong. Anyway, it's loaded with fantastic this might be the first time we hear Joe Elliott's Ooh Yeahs, which I think is very good. It's very him. That sort of American sleaziness, which I absolutely love. But it's not really sleazy, it's just the way he sings. But it's got. It also feels a bit like. I don't know. Yeah, I think certainly rhythmically it feels a bit like Dr. Feelgood, like that pub band, punk rock band we talked about before. Dr. Feelgood, you might go, no, it doesn't sound anything like it, but you know, we're all different, we all hear different things, and you might go, I don't hear that at all. Well, I could sort of hear it slightly there. But it's very open, it's very wide sound, it's very clean, it's beautifully produced, it's not mushy, dirty, muddy. It's a brilliant production, actually, and it stands up, you know, all these years later, it stands up incredibly, 40 years or so, and it's just, wow, you know, who would believe it, right? And then we move on to When the Walls Come Tumbling Down. Now, this is the prog sound to me. This is really proggy. It opens with a spoken word part, and it was originally spoken by Joe Elliott on demos and live productions, but it got on the album, was recorded by Dave Cousins from the Straubs, did it. And he says that he tried to make it sound as close to his impersonation of Laurence Olivier as he could. It really has a bit of that sort of epicness that Maiden had, you know, and did very well with Alexander the Great and Rhyming the Ancient Mariner. It's quite a dark song. It's very epic, very literal, a track. I hate to say this, but if you listen very carefully, you can almost hear Alexander the Great in it. Maybe they were influenced. Maybe Maiden were influenced by it. It's got this proto gallop in it, not a Maiden gallop as such, but there's a gallop in it. It has that real atmospheric open with the cymbals and the wind and the voice. And it feels, this is probably the most, in fact it is, it's the most new wave of British heavy metal there is on this album, because that genre was filled with this, as you know, with the sort of dragons and the medieval imagery and Arthurian legend and, you know, science fiction and all that sort of stuff. It was basically an audio version of the comic books the kids were reading before they, or the books they were reading, in Maiden's case. It's very proggy. It's as you would guess, it's probably my favourite songs on the album because of that. I love that it comes this far into the album. It's not a long song. It's not like Rhyming the Ancient Mariner, where it's 15 minutes long. No, by no means. It speeds along. I have to look into if it's based on a book or not. I couldn't find that out. Look, it might be. I don't know. I'll have to check it out. But it was really, really amazing. It's very unexpected after the sort of new American sound that you get early on in the album, and the Priestly kind of sound. And then you get the single Wasted, on which came out on the 2nd of November 1979 and got to 61. This is a good rock and roll song, okay? Great sing-along, really good solo. I really enjoyed, I still enjoy the journey it takes you on. It's a classic sound, right? It's a good single. It's amazing it didn't do any better. I suppose, unfortunately, at the time it was fighting the punk explosion, and so people were not buying heavy rock album songs or heavy metal songs, maybe. So, you know, if it had come out maybe 2-3 years later, it probably would have got into the top 20 quite easily. It's a real fun song, and being at 61 is not good enough for it, in my opinion. Really great guitar solo in it. I'm not sure whether it's Willis or Clark on that solo, but someone could probably tell me on that. It's absolutely brilliant. And then we followed with Rocks Off, which came off the EP, original EP. It is what it is. It is actually, for me, a prototype, proto-glam rock hair metal song. Not proto-glam, because glam would be around before then, but hair metal. It's got that kind of sound and feel that you'd get from Motley Crue or Poison, you know, or LA Guns or something like that. Some of those, and I'm going to say this out, God, I'm going to lose some listeners, but awful. I cannot stand hair metal. I really can't. It's sleazy. It's glammy. Again, I feel it also has a Joan Jett feel. The one good thing about it is I really, really like the guitar solo in it. I really like the speed and the fun and the space in the notes and the clarity of it. Nothing's repeated. It's all kind of... It's just fun. I think the overall arching... feedback from this album is fun, fun with some extra fun and side of fun sauce on top. Brilliant. I mean, if I'm going to say this, on the Millsy meter, the now famous Millsy meter, this album takes it to 10. It may not go to 11. I think it misses the mark in some areas, purely on the sort of AOR feel. But if you're going to go and take away that and just listen to it as a good rock album, it sits closely to a 10.5, almost an 11. It almost takes the Mercury out of the meter. I absolutely love this album. And then we're going to move into... get my notes. We get It Don't Matter. Coming to the end of the album here. It Don't Matter. It couldn't be more East Coast, I've written here. Big arena sound, right? This is where it starts. Big arena sound. Eagles, Journey, that kind of thing. It's got audacious... I wrote this. Cannot believe I wrote this. Audacious wah. It's dirty and it's frantic. I love wah. I think wah guitar, for me... I first fell in love with wah through Clapton's use of it on Disraeli Gears. And every time now when I hear a good wah being played, it just sends me into... It has sort of a tribalistic... angry sadness to it, a sort of depth of texture, which I absolutely love. And if it's done properly, Zakk Wylde does it, uses it really well. He just opens it up and uses it as an open, like a gate, whereas these guys were, you know, opening and closing the gate to get that sort of deep wah sound. And it's masterful, really, really, truly. All I can say about that is, again, where you come off a real rollicking roller coaster of a song like Rocks Off, and then It Don't Matter jumps in after you. It's truly all killer, no filler. That's not true. I said I don't really like Rock Brigade, and Hello America does leave me a little bit cold. But I think out of the 11 tracks, 9 out of 11 to me sounds like all killer, right? And then we go Answer to the Master, second to last track. It took me right back to Norbom. It has a real Norbom proto-doom sound, I've written here. I mean, that's true, it does. It has a real sort of deep, dark, almost Witchfinder General-esque sound. Witchfinder as well. Now, you could say that Witchfinder, because Witchfinder and General and Witchfinder were playing around the same time. It feels like it's got a real groovy DNA. It sort of feels groovy until it comes the guitars come back in after the sort of like grindy, dirty sound. It then goes straight back to a stadium sound. It's tight. It's fast. It has a Sabbath feel. I've talked about Sabbath before, one of my favourite doom bands, thrash bands ever. It was an episode. Please go back and look into my catalogue. You will find it. You know, I reviewed Dreamweaver. It does. It sounds like that. And, you know, honestly, I think Sabbath were probably listening to this album. Who knows? Were Def Leppard listening to, Witchfinder General? I mean, it certainly has a sort of early Sabbath sound on there as well, which could easily be very British. There's nothing, I mean, America sort of grabbed that doom sound later on, but they didn't really have it the way that the Brits had. And it has a sort of doom sound. It's actually a delicious change of texture and pace in this. And then we finish with Overture. This comes from the EP originally. This really has a Who feel. This has a very obvious status quo Who sound. And I didn't mention the Quo before, but they also have a Quo feel across this, you know, this album. This twin guitar fun, dueling guitars, big smiles on their faces, just rock and roll fun. It also has a real heap of Nazareth in this track. And it ends the album really, really well. Now, I've said quite all the way through this review that they sound like this and they sound like that. because this does sound like they're finding their feet album. Obviously High and Dry and Onwards, they had their Leopard sound. This to me was sounded like years and years of practice and touring, and you know, like all bands, I've been in bands that are the same thing. We just play cover versions of your favorite bands and favorite tracks because you love them, and it's not easy to play, but you, because you know them so well, you just learn the parts, and then that style of music seeps into your style of music, and then suddenly you're playing middle eight in a track that sounds very much like Overture or very much like Boys Are Back in Town. Again, this band also has a Thin Lizzy groove to it, which I sort of forgot to really mention because it's just come to me then. But it does, you know, it's got that. Anything that has a Dirty Gibson feel is going to have. And that's why I love Gibson guitars, listeners. It's honestly why I love them. Because they just, you know, nothing says rock and roll quite like a Gibson guitar. You know, like to me, Telecasters say, tell me I'm a country band. You know, and Fenders just sound like, to me, say, hey, you know, we're playing some good rock and roll here. We're playing some very intricate and clever guitar solos. We're playing some blues, but still for me, most beautiful guitar to listen to through a Marshall amp and not much else is an overdriven Gibson. And, you know, the early classic 70s ones that aren't chambered, they're not chambered bodies, they weigh a bloody ton. And the way that Clark used to play it slung around his legs. Real Joan Jett sound, real sort of, as I said, influenced probably by New York Dolls, probably by the Ramones, even though they have none of that sound, Ramones sound anyway. It's just brilliant. And the album is a cracker, it really is. It's their bare best album by a long way for me. I mean, you might disagree. You might say, no, I like the extremely overproduced, over-melodramatic, balladized albums like Pyromania and Hysteria. Now, I was talking about this to my wife only this morning, and she rolled her eyes up. She loves Hysteria, loves it. And when I said I don't really enjoy it, she looked at me and said, oh, you're just a snob. And you know what? No, I'm not. I'd like to think it was music snobbery, but I have enough experience in this industry and in my musical taste to understand that if you put on Hysteria, I will listen to it. I could sing along to it. It's a fun album, and it's, you know, it is easily accessible. It is easily accessible mass market rock and roll with some absolute crackers. Now, that's not to say I didn't love it. I bought Animal when it came out. Okay, on the day of release, I went and bought Animal. It was the same day that I bought Welcome to the Jungle. Okay, so I remember that day vividly, getting off the bus, running to Our Price Records in Brent Cross, and with the only money I could scrounge around, I bought those two singles. So I remember it vividly, all right? And I loved it. I really, really did. It was that time in my life when I was just learning what I liked and what I didn't like. And you know what? I bloody love On Through the Night. It is so different to every other Nwobom album out there. Nothing out there in that whole 2 to 3 year period even comes anywhere near it in its difference. You know, it very much like Maiden, sound like Maiden and have their own sound and did not sound like Nwobom, if you know what I mean. Def Leppard's On Through the Night is exactly the same, and sadly it's not held in the same breath as Killers or Iron Maiden, you know, or even Lightning for the Nations by Diamond Head. It isn't, and I think it should be. I think it really, really should be. So I hope you enjoyed this. Please do go and take a listen. It's on all good streaming platforms. You can listen to it, you can watch it on YouTube or listen to it on YouTube. But if you can get hold of the first EP, I'm not sure. I don't think it's on Spotify. Let me have a look. Yes, it is. It is on Spotify. Fantastic. You have to dive down and go right to the bottom of their catalogue to find it. It should be with the albums. I don't know why it's not. I just found out that Joe Elliott's just done a single with Ghost. There you go. What a surprise. Spillways featuring Joe Elliott. Oh, dearie dear. Anyway, that aside. That came out last year. Do go and have a listen to the EP. It's rough, it's ready. It has more of a... It's closer to more than a Wham sound. It's only three songs. Ride Into the Sun, Get Your Rocks Off, which they called Rocks Off on the new album, on this album, and Overture. Three songs, 14 minutes long. Well worth the listen. You can then see the history of the music from this EP through to this album I've just talked about. Anyway, thanks for listening. Thanks for listening to me waffling on. Do go and please give me a review on Spotify, on iTunes, and wherever you get your podcasts. 5 stars would be nice, please, because the more reviews I get, the more people see me. The algorithm works that way. I know it's stupid, but it does. And I'm going to try and beat last year's numbers. I had an absolute cracker last year, and this year, lots of big projects planned for the show. So hold on, it's going to be fantastically a year. But yes, please do pop over and give me a review. And after you've done that, go and listen to this album. And if you feel so inclined, go and buy it on CD, or if you find a vinyl copy of it, if you can, grab it, because it is an absolute cracker. Bye for now.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itzinas.
I'm Kayla Itzinas, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.